Welcome to another Rick and Rob Sports Show. I'm Robert Laidlaw.
And I'm Rick Drewer.
Today we're going to look at lucky stars, where sports people have got lucky and where there's been some amazing results through the history. But more to the point, this week, South Australia are playing in the Sheffield Shield final for the first time for 20 years. And Rick, they did have a little bit of luck on their side.
Well, I do think that there was a concept of some lucky stars, or the stars falling into alignment in the way in which the Redbacks have got to hosting a final, being half a point, 0.5 ahead of Victoria to host the final after an interesting situation where in the first round of the year, Victoria and New South Wales played a game at the SCG, which would, after a couple of hours, was abandoned. And Cricket Australia, in its wisdom, awarded 6 points, that is the equivalent of outright victory, to Victoria, I guess on the grounds that New South Wales hadn't prepared a oval in a satisfactory condition. The only concern in relation to being in this concept of lucky stars is that Victoria got awarded the 6 points, as I've mentioned, but weren't awarded anything for bonus points, that is, points gathered in the first 100 overs they bowled or the first 100 overs they batted. The scenario, I guess you can say, is that in all likelihood, they would have scored more than 0.5 of a point and therefore would have finished on top. In the likelihood of a draw, that wouldn't have occurred, and the results would probably have stayed the way they are in terms of South Australia finishing top. However, it's a situation where we'll never know. You go with the flow and accept the good luck as it comes.
And of course, if New South Wales had won that particular game, they would have been top, but South Australia would have been second no matter what.
Yes, they would have, although if that game had gone on, you would at least surprise... New South Wales would definitely have finished top, and so this final would have been played in Coffs Harbour rather than at the Glenelg Oval.
Yeah, so that's amazing that we're playing at Glenelg, but if Victoria had won, it would have been in Alice Springs, and if New South Wales had finished top, it would have been in Coffs Harbour. That's really taking one of the most traditional, important state-based cricket competitions away from its foundations.
I think it's very, very sad indeed. And the reason for the situation having got to where it is now is superficially because the AFL has taken over pride of place and eliminated Adelaide Oval, the MCG and the SCG because of football starting. However, I think Cricket Australia has a fair bit to answer for in the sense that, unlike the old days, dare I say it, when I was playing, where you'd play up to Christmas Eve and you'd have a couple of days off for Christmas and then start playing very early in January, what Cricket Australia have done now is separate the Sheffield Shield with a six-week break for the Big Bash League, which obviously generates money, but not only pushes cricket out further in terms of when the final can be played to guarantee a clash with the AFL.
One link to the last time South Australia was in the Sheffield Shield back in 95-96 when they won it against Western Australia, Darren Lehman was playing for South Australia, and this time his son is playing.
He is indeed, and Jake has huge potential. The big question mark, I guess, you hanging over both him and Travis Head is that they love scoring their runs very quickly, and let's hope for the final they do score lots of runs. But the tactics that are going to be employed, could it backfire in terms of being a five-day game, unless South Australia set out to and risk winning the game? If they score very quickly, there's also the opportunity that Victoria could bowl them out, given that our batting has been somewhat weak, or the weak link in our team this year. The bowling is certainly the reason where why South Australia has got to the top. And there's a big gamble in... The big question, I guess, is, putting it bluntly, whether the Heads and the Lehmans and the Cosgroves can bat as you would normally do for a traditional five-day game.
And out of interest, all three of those names have a connection to Gawler, with Travis Head having played cricket at South Gawler, and Lehman's father, Darren, obviously well-known Gawler identity. And even Cozzy had sort of some time up here where he was at Trinity College. So come on, Redbacks, let's bring the bacon home. Now, getting back on track about lucky stars, there's a whole range of different situations that we looked at, Rick. But one interesting one was Steve Bradbury, who in 2002 took the gold medal almost by default in the ice skating when everyone fell over.
Well, he did in fact fall over, and it's probably one of the most famous sporting victories that the modern world has seen. But and many people mocked his victory because the rest of the field did fall over and he missed out on the crash and skated past them and won the gold medal. But I think you have to put into perspective the fact that he was a very successful sportsman, despite the amazing number of injuries that he had. The first huge injury was back in 1994 at the World Cup, when another skater, and it's a horrendous thought of what this must have been like, another skater's blade sliced through Bradbury's thigh after a collision, and knowing a little bit about anatomy, he, at the time, of course, the race was on and Bradbury's heart rate was up around 200 and obviously the heart pumping incredibly hard. And the skates cut through all four of his quadriceps. Quadriceps means four. And he lost over 2 litres of blood. Now, that's getting very serious. And in fact, it wouldn't have taken much more for him to possibly lapse into unconsciousness and even die. He required over 111 stitches and couldn't move his leg for nearly 3 weeks, and he took 18 months to recover. Having said that, there's even worse. Back, shouldn't be laughing, but in September of 2000, Bradbury fractured his neck in a training accident where he attempted to jump over another skater who'd fallen and crashed at the speed they travel headfirst into a barrier and fractured his C4 and C5 vertebrae. In actual fact, thank heavens he fractured them, because if he'd ruptured and broken them, then he would have died basically instantly because it's so high up. He spent months in a halo brace and needed four pins to be inserted into his skull. Having said all that, he recovered, and whether it by the stars or the lucky stars, he went to the Winter Olympics and scored the gold medal in the 1,000-metre sprint by, as it were, staying on his feet.
Absolutely fantastic story. I mean, when you look at the back story there, you think to yourself, this guy really did deserve it, because, you know, two situations in his life, in his sport, where he could have been killed, he survived and ended up getting a little bit of luck. So thank you, lucky stars. You deserve it, Steve Bradbury. Well done. Going on to a similar type scenario, Andrew Lloyd, who was a runner of note in the 80s and the 90s, he had a bit of a reputation for a bit of a choker in the big events, even though he'd won 4 City to Surfs and 3 Melbourne Marathons and numerous other races. He never seemed to perform that well on the big stage until the 1990 Commonwealth Games. He was in the 5,000 metre race, and he was sort of picked as one of the favourites to be a medal chance. And as the race unwound, the reigning gold medalist at the Olympics, John Agugu, did a mid-race fall, and there was about 4 people were involved, and his reaction to the fall was to sprint to the front and go about half a lap in front of everyone, but in so doing, he spent a few pennies. So as the race unwound and we get down to the last lap or two, he was visibly tiring, but had a huge lead. And with one lap to go, he held about a 50-metre lead, which in normal circumstances should have been plenty. And the rest of the race was battling behind them with three or four guys in contention for second and third, including Lloydie. And it got to a scenario where it was about 100 metres to go, and Lloydie's about 6 metres behind battling with the Pommy guy, and you get to about 20 metres and he's on this guy's shoulder, and it's in an exciting finish. He managed to put his nose in front and he won the race. And it's perhaps the greatest sporting event I've ever seen in regards to the impression it left on me.
Well, I've seen it in replay, and it is, it's a bit like a horse winning the Melbourne Cup. At the he left his run to the perfect moment. He's given him 70 metres or so and caught him literally on the line. And the excitement must have been just amazing to see this guy gather in the leader who looked home and hosed with half a lap to go.
And you're talking about some of the bad luck that Steve Bradbury had. Well, Andrew Lloyd sort of was involved in a car accident, which his first wife died. So it's funny that in life sometimes adversity can sometimes, you know, drive you further so that you can, you know, get some success.
I'm sure that that's absolutely true. And there's a thousand illustrations of it, whether it's just the inspiration of having been through hard times that gives some sports people that extra motivation to really go beyond the call of duty, as it were, and extend the body beyond the ability that it would normally perform. I suppose the easiest way to parallel it is a bit like the numerous stories you hear about, you know, mothers lifting cars off of kids that have been run over or whatever, whereas in normal day experience, they would not be able to lift up the shopping bag, and all of a sudden they have this inner strength to be able to perform something way beyond their normal physical abilities.
And while on the subject of lucky stars, there's a number of different scenarios through sport. It's probably what keeps people coming to sport, the excitement of the surprise win, et cetera, et cetera. But I remember back in 1983 when Australia 2 won the America's Cup, they actually were trailing that series 3-1 for the best of seven, and they won two in a row to make it 3-3, and they, even in the final, they were trailing, and they got some lucky wind to get ahead, and they ended up winning it, which was the first time a non-American boat had won the America's Cup.
Sailing is an incredible sport. I have had a little bit of experience having raced a catamaran, which is a little bit different to an America's Cup boat, but and I used to race down at Victor Harbour, and gee, there was a huge advantage for the locals when it came to competition because of the situation of Granite Island. There were winds and eddies there, and if the markers were out near Granite Island, then the locals knew what was going on as far as the wind shifts went, whereas visitors struggled badly. So a skillful sailor can normally read the winds, but there is, well, I'd call it a bit of lucky stardom in reading them correctly on occasions.
Of course, even in Major League Baseball, Boston Red Sox, they were a power team like in the early 19th century up to about 1918 when they won their last World Series for 90-something years, and they traded Babe Ruth to the Yankees, who then became a power. And Boston had suffered many losses in finals, in World Series and championship games to the Yankees, and the Yankees always had their measure, and Boston had never sort of won a series against them. And then 2004, the Yankees were won the first three games in the championship series game to go to the World Series, and no team had ever come from 3-0 down to win a best of seven series, but Boston did, and they went on to win the series. So even at the top level professional sport, they have it too.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's the old story that sometimes the underdog, when they start to get on a victory roll, it's the inspiration and the motivation that drives them on, when in fact, on paper, it doesn't matter what sport you're looking at, in theory, they shouldn't be advancing with success. But the human brain and motivation is an amazing thing. And if you could bottle it and sell it, we'd both probably own this radio station.
Yes, no, it would be. It would be sort of it'd be amazing if you knew the winners beforehand and you did a Marty McFly and you went back and you had the Sporting Almanac and you could make a killing.
You could.
Yeah. Now, last year, Central District's footy club in the SNFL, they weren't in the top five all year, and in the last game of the season, they beat South Adelaide, who were fifth, and they grabbed fifth spot by a slim percentage margin. Then they went on and they beat Norwood in the elimination final, the first time they'd ever won an elimination final. Then they beat Port in the first semi, so they beat Norwood and Port in the final series for the first time ever. Yeah, so lost to Western in the Premier Final, went on to win their first premiership since 1983. But again, that's another situation. They're lucky stars. How can you not play, be in the top five all year and then end up the season third?
Well, actually, a very similar parallel to that has occurred only a week ago when the Premier League cricket, the grand final was between Southern Districts and Tea Tree Gully, who were odds-on favourite to win, having been premiers the year before. And in fact, Southern Districts got into the final four for the first time at the end of the minor round and finished up with the upset of many years by winning their first ever premiership.
Gee, that's amazing. And just to finish off with, let's talk a little bit about the Adelaide Crows, because they had a couple of seasons back in the 90s where they won two flags, and I'm still can't fathom how they did it. I remember in 97 when they won the first in the preliminary final against the Western Bulldogs, they were 29 points down at half time, and even late in the last quarter, halfway through the last quarter, they were still four goals down. They ended up winning by 2 points, and then the following week beat St Kilda. And then the next year, they finished fifth in the minor round. They beat the West Coast in Perth in the last game of the season to make the finals. They played Melbourne in Melbourne. They actually lost that, but because of the configuration of the finals, they were still in it the next week, and they had to play in Sydney, and they beat Sydney. They had to play Western Bulldogs in the Premier Final, and it was no two-pointer that one. They won by 8+, with Robin kicking 6 goals. And then, the shock of shocks, they played North Melbourne, who were on 11-12 game winning streak. And at half-time, they were trailing by 4 goals, but North were a little bit wayward. I think they kicked 2-11 for the term. But amazingly, the Crows got up and won.
Well, you can certainly say thank you, lucky stars, at the risk of offending some Crow supporters, and I'm not wishing to do that at all. But and there is one argument to it. You can say that bad kicking is bad football, but particularly that second grand final, in the second quarter, would you believe North Melbourne entered the 50 zone 21 times to Adelaide 7, and would you also believe that they kicked 2-11 to 1-1? I remember watching the game, and of course bad kicking is bad football, but the game really should have been over. And it's interesting that in both that game that you've mentioned, the preliminary the year before and the grand final, Malcolm Blight, who has been looked upon as being one of the greatest AFL coaches of all time, probably the situation in both of those games was made considerably easier for him because he had nothing to lose and everything to gain by throwing the team around and making perhaps what would have been considered risky and controversial position changes, because it was now or never, as Elvis would say. And both times it worked out, particularly that two-point victory against the Bulldogs when, in fact, as Robert, you've said, they were still down in the last quarter and Jarman was thrown to full forward and kicked 5 goals in 15 minutes. So the stars were certainly in alignment.
Of course, the grand final against St Kilda in 97, Jarman kicked 6 goals, 5 of them in the last quarter as well. So, and the next year he kicked 5 against North Melbourne for the whole game. So, yeah, amazing time for Crows supporters back then.
Yes, I guess you can say that North Melbourne score in the 98 grand final of 8-22 probably explains everything.
Absolutely. There are plenty of other subject matters in regards to the lucky stars for each sport, and we could go on forever, but that'll be it for today. And thank you for listening to another Rick and Rob Sports Show. I'm Robert Laidlaw.
And I'm Rick Drewer.